Chapter 41. Anakin ducked through the arch into the arena, Tisar close on his heels. The rest of the strike team was already three tiers below, lighting their way with glow sticks and nervously snaking past a nesting Voxen. The two Jedi started after them, circling around a 40-meter crater that Anakin had made moments earlier with a thermal detonator. A tumult of snarling and bellowing rumbled through the arch behind them, prompting Anakin and Tisar to launch themselves headlong down the tiers. The thermal detonator Kossuth had been clutching when she died would go off 3 seconds after the ravaging Voxen knocked it from her lifeless hand. Something tore inside Anakin's wound and sent a half-numbed pain shooting up through his belly. He ignored it and completed his somersault, then landed, dead-legged, two tiers below, and tumbled over the edge. Two things happened next. First, the Voxen that he had disturbed took offense and opened its mouth to spew acid. Second, the thermal detonator went off above him, flashing a fan of white brilliance across the arena and disintegrating a 40-meter length of wall and bringing untold tons of Yorick coral crashing down into the arena. Anakin was a lot more worried about the angry Voxen. Fumbling for his lightsaber, he rolled away and leapt to his feet, only to find the beast scratching at its own throat, mysteriously choking on its tongue, and dribbling brown acid out the side of its mouth. A dark shiver raced down his spine, and he turned to find Welk standing behind him, one hand curled into a strangling claw, his face contorted into an angry mask of concentration.
"Jason needs everybody down."
Tenel Ka's hushed voice came over the comlink.
"Stay low and silent."
Anakin obeyed quickly, Welk less so, and Anakin watched in silence as the dark Jedi used the Force to strangle the life out of the creature. Certainly, neither Anakin nor anyone else on the strike team would have used the Force to kill directly. Calling upon its power to extinguish the very life that sustained it was a certain path to the dark side. But Anakin would have been hard-pressed to call it immoral. Had the situation been reversed, he would not have hesitated to use a blaster or lightsaber to save Welk. As the rumble of falling Yorick coral faded away, the Voxen continued to snarl and scratch at the Yorick coral beneath their feet. Anakin felt Jason reaching out with the Force, soothing the beasts with reassuring thoughts, working to persuade them that this was the last of the disturbances. Given the commotion of the last hour, the task was difficult, but the Voxen were so eager to remain on their nests that they calmed.
"It is okay to move slowly," Tenel Ka advised, "but do nothing threatening. Under no circumstances must anyone attack."
As Anakin rose, a wave of dizziness made him brace himself against the wall, but no one noticed. All eyes were focused on Zek, who was marching over to Welk with fury in his eyes.
"You used the dark side," he hissed. "Better to let the beast kill young Solo?"
Lomi asked, placing herself between the two.
"You broke your promise," Zek said.
"He saved my life." Anakin stepped to Zek's side, then glanced pointedly around. There were no live Voxen closer than 20 meters, but all of the beasts within the range of their glow sticks were ruffling their neck scales and staring at the strike team.
"And if we can feel your outrage, so can the Voxen."
The heat went out of Zek's expression.
"Sorry, Anakin."
He glared at Welk and Lomi, then said,
"Don't use the Force again. Not around me."
With that, he spun on his heel and started down the tier after Jason and Jaina. Anakin watched him go, suddenly too weary to concern himself over Zek's rigid view of the dark side. His legs shook from the mere effort of standing. He took a moment to concentrate, using the Force to muster his strength, then waved Welk and Lomi forward and fell in behind.
"By the way, thanks for saving my life," he said to Welk.
"Then you do not feel tainted by the dark side?" Lomi asked.
"I'm not afraid of it, if that's what you mean," Anakin replied.
"But Zek's right. You did break your promise."
"Don't worry," Welk said, not looking back. "I won't do it again."
They descended the tiers in a zigzagging course as Jason gave the widest possible berth to the nesting Voxen.
Even through the breath masks, the stench grew ever more unbearable, and they saw bodies in all states of decomposition, the hopeful mothers still standing guard over the food they expected to nourish their sterile eggs. In a few cases, the Voxen herself had starved to death and collapsed on top of her nest's bare bones. The sight struck Anakin as morbidly sad, though it did not really surprise him. He knew from his studies, and from Jason's endless discourses during long space voyages, that many creatures faced death to bring forth the next generation. This willingness, and the fact that in some species it was even necessary, was tangible evidence of the eternal nature of the Force, Jason said. About halfway down they came to a 10-meter drop, which proved to be another tier of archers, similar to the ones out of which they had come. Rather than risk drawing any more nestless Voxen through these portals, they began to circle the arena, or whatever it was, clambering up and down tiers in order to avoid Voxen nests. The effort quickly began to tell on Anakin, even when he used the Force to assist himself. It was not long before his knees were trembling and his belly burning. Tahiri, of course, noticed right away.
"Anakin, you're shaking."
Anakin nodded. "The smell is getting to me."
"The smell makes no one else shake,"
Tisar noted, coming up behind Anakin.
"This one will carry you."
Before Anakin could object, the Barabel scooped him up in his arms. Tahiri insisted on reporting Anakin's condition to Tekle, whose examination came to an abrupt end when an angry Voxen stuck its head over the tier above and belched acid in their direction. Fearful of agitating the rest of the beasts, the strike team resumed its march, with Anakin cradled in Tisar's scaly arms. As they continued around the arena, Anakin saw that the tiers below were better appointed than those through which he and his companions were traveling. The walls were decorated with statues of Yun Yamka, many showing the god tearing off his own limbs or draining his blood. A few showed Yuuzhan Vong warriors being devoured by the god or emerging whole again from among its tentacles. When he began to glimpse long spikes and sharp hooks protruding from the walls surrounding the arena floor, Anakin thought this was probably a stadium where the Yuuzhan Vong had once entertained themselves by pitting slave gladiators against each other. Then Anakin noticed the series of ramps extending from the lower tier onto the arena floor and realized he had it wrong. The Yuuzhan Vong had been the ones who fought here, or at least those lucky enough to sit in the privileged lower tier. Viewed in that light, the statues of Yun Yamka took on a religious tone, and he began to imagine the arena as an enormous church. He could almost see the place filled with Yuuzhan Vong faithful as the world ship hurtled through the darkness between galaxies, the most prominent citizens and celebrated leaders down on the arena floor, honoring their gods with their blood, by their deaths assuring the Yuuzhan Vong of a new home in the distant galaxy of the New Republic. "Put me down," Anakin said. Warriors like those would not be defeated by someone who had to be born into battle in another's arms. "I won't be carried, not in here, not until this is done." Tisar returned Anakin to his unsteady feet. Labaka groaned, then moaned a question. "Then how do you expect—" "Tisar can help me," Anakin said, interrupting MTD's translation. He turned to the Barabel. "When Yulaha was being tortured, you gave her strength."
"It will not be as much," Tisar warned. "There were three then."
"I'll take what I can," Anakin said. "I just want to finish this on my feet." The Barabel showed his needle-like teeth.
"Then this one would be honored."
Anakin felt Tisar make contact through the Force, then experienced a peculiar reptilian chill as the Barabel brought them together emotionally. The world turned strangely crimson, and Anakin felt his weakness pouring into Tisar, and Tisar's strength flowing into him. With it came a strange sense of loneliness, not quite sorrow as humans knew it, but two aching absences that would never be filled. Without realizing that he had closed them, Anakin opened his eyes.
"I
It isn't quite what I expected.
No, Tisar asked. You wanted scales?
Astonished to discover he actually understood the joke, Anakin chuckled and started after the others. His connection to Tisar felt similar to the Battlemeld, save that now it was the Barabel's strength that was being shared. A few minutes later, Alima announced that they had circled around the arena to a point opposite their entry arch, and the team began to ascend the stairs. Anakin was able to climb under his own power, but Raynar was still suffering from the effects of the poison antidote, and had to be lifted from one tier to the next with the Force. They were only one tier from the exit when Raynar, waiting for Alima to climb up after him, pointed 10 meters down the tier.
Look.
His tongue was so thick that Anakin did not understand him at first.
Errol.
Raynar turned and started to stagger in the direction he was pointing, drawing a warning neck rustle from a nearby Voxen. Alima pulled herself up in one swift motion and rushed after the disoriented Jedi, while Anakin and several others reached out with the Force and jerked him back. The Voxen belched acid and missed, then lunged forward and slashed Raynar twice. The first attack tore through his armored jumpsuit. The second opened 4 deep gashes. Leaving the wounded Jedi to his companions, Anakin jerked his lightsaber off his harness and activated the blade.
"Anakin, no," Jason warned. "Let it go back to its nest."
Anakin deactivated the blade, but kept the weapon at high guard. Tisar floated Raynar's babbling figure over to Ganner and Alima, who quickly disappeared behind the edge with him. The Voxen continued to glare down, its beady eyes fixed on the lightsaber in Anakin's hands.
"Need help, young Solo?" Momi asked. "I can kill it." "But there is that promise.
Keep your promise," Anakin said. He slowly lowered his lightsaber and backed away. "You really don't want to see Zek angry."
"Do not be so sure," Lomi said. "I hear he is very powerful when he is angry."
The Voxen retreated to its nest. Anakin dared to breathe again. Then he and the others scrambled up the last tier to the exit. Alima and Zek were already on the other side with Tekli and Raynar, but Jason and the rest were waiting just inside the arch. Anakin stepped through and peered at Raynar over the Chadra Fon's small shoulder. 4 deep gashes ran diagonally across his chest, but the bleeding was not severe and no bone was showing. "How is he?"
"Well enough for now," Tekli said, filling the wounds with cleansing foam. "But much will depend on how Silgall's anti-disease agents work."
Anakin continued to stare at Raynar. Another casualty, this one a close friend of Jason and Jaina. But they had made it across the Voxen Warrens. He felt both sorrowful and relieved, but not guilty. He had chosen as well as he could. Though Raynar was probably too incoherent to notice, Anakin kneeled down and patted his shoulder. "Can he be moved?"
"Have someone levitate him," Tekli said. "I'll ride."
Zek had the patient in the air before Anakin could give the order. Alima was beside him, holding Tekli's medpack, her face distressed. Anakin gave her arm a reassuring squeeze, then gently took the medpack from her and passed it to Tahiri. "We need you to navigate," he said to Alima. "Lomi's never been outside the training course, and everyone else is lost down here." Alima thought for a moment, then guided them down the passage in what seemed the opposite direction they had been traveling. This corridor resembled the one they had followed into the arena, save that it lacked acid-scarred caves connected to a parallel tunnel. Eventually, the team passed an intersection that had been blocked with a Yorick coral plug, presumably to discourage Voxen from escaping onto the rest of the world ship. Alima passed by the first, then the next, and finally stopped at a third.
"It feels like we're very near the surface here."
A shudder ran down her leku as she spoke.
"I'm guessing we are far from the gate they were herding us toward. Maybe we can finally take them by surprise."
Jaina checked her comlink.
"Maybe we can. They still haven't tripped the Flechette mine."
Anakin gestured at the barricade. Who wants the honors? Lobaka and Tisar ignited their lightsabers simultaneously and set to work. The Yorick coral was much harder than that aboard the Exquisite Death, and it required nearly 20 minutes to cut through the meter-deep plug. Anakin spent much of the time in meditation, doing what he could for his injury, but Tekle did not want to open it again. Even if a stitch had popped, there would be nothing solid to reattach it to. Finally, Ganner levitated the last block out of the intersection. Ahead of them, a large access tunnel ascended toward the surface at a shallow angle. About 50 meters distant, it ended in a transparent wall of membrane and an airlocked valveway that opened into one of the deep-walled service routes they had seen from space. This travelway, however, was obviously no longer in use. It was crammed with captured equipment. Land speeders, utility lifts, hover taxis, even a Sorosub cloud car. All of it no doubt being stored out of sight until it was needed in the training course. And there, sitting cockeyed in the middle of the tangle with hatches sealed tight and one landing gear only half extended, was a battered light freighter. "Well," Anakin said, "it looks like the Force is finally with us."